Mr. Cowan's Reel 10. After the Vietri fighting, where did you go?
Well, by that time I nearly hadn't covered over a bit of the Volturno, making ways for the Volturno across the river. I think, I'm not quite sure, but I think just before the Volturno, I think we came up for a few days. I can't exactly say. I know we came up for a few days. I can't remember much of the accident across the Volturno. I know we were in it, I can't remember much of the accident in the Volturno.
Do you remember whether, you know, obviously you come to a river, you've got to find out where you might cross it.
Yes, yeah.
Was that done by patrols? And
that was done by patrols and by I think they sent for the engineering firm to make a sort of good bridge in one part of the Volturno. But I can't remember exactly what happened.
Was the river very wide, do you recall, at that point, where you crossed?
It was wide, but I couldn't take it anyway. It didn't seem to take much crossing once we could cross it, once we didn't know it was crossing.
And the original crossing, would that be made in boats, or...?
Well, I tell you, so I went across in a carrier, a burn carrier. There's some of the went across on a burn carrier. There had been a bit of a road made, you know. And we went across on a burn carrier. I can't remember.
Were you under enemy fire?
Oh, yes, I. Yeah, before, I think I always remember before we crossed the Volturno, there was a heavy barrage. I went the other across on the far side, you know. And we had some planes coming. I'm not quite sure if those Spitfires, and we had some planes coming. We had some bombers coming to drop some bombs. It had been arranged, you know, from VHQ. But it was a hell of a amount of action at the far side. Because when our troops were across, I don't know if we were the first ones across. I think the Leicesters or some other battalion was across there. There's an armored division across there before we get across, so they must have cleared the way before we get across them. I can't even much about it.
When's your next memory of the action? Crossing the Volturno and then you went on?
It was always the same type of fighting from one of us across the Volturno towards what we're working towards Grigliano, I think. And it's a Grigliano, Jim, and that was quite sure. It was one of the big. I can never remember the small forest because the small village is enormous. It was a sort of the same type of fighting. You did come across a bit flat terrain occasionally. You came down from the hills and you did get a bit fighting on the flat. It was a bit different, you know, for digging and whatnot. It was the same type of advance, but whatever. We seemed to go on very, very well at that part lately. To get it towards Chimano that way, you see.
So Colonel Preston seems to have gained a lot of his reputation on his insistence that you attack quietly, silently before the artillery came in. Mm-hmm. In fact, you moved and then the artillery came in.
He's
was that the case?
He's a good tactical officer. He was well liked in our battalion because he was quite a nice man. He saw things out. He wasn't haphazard, he thought things out before it. But he thought attacking was not known attack. Attack is not really planned, you know, that takes enemy by surprise. He had that technical way going on for different things. As I say, the battalion trusted him most because he was a really good battalion commander.
Did he stay close with the forward troops? Did you see him a lot?
He was never far behind. He always visited some part of the action. But as I say, we had really good battalion, all the battalion staff officers, that was very, very good. The freshman, as I say, was well liked by the lads.
So he was well up to the front, basically, when actions were on, so you did see quite a bit of him. Did he, obviously he would have various methods of encouraging you to go ahead with your fighting.
Well, I can't remember any of but I know for a fact he would have, but he passed them on to the company commanders, what he wanted, and he just passed them down to us.
The next river after Volturno was the Tiano, or Tino, which was again crossed at night, silent crossing.
One or two small rivers were crossed. We don't know how we'll cross them, but we'll cross them somewhere.
What were the Italian civilians, how were they receiving you?
Well, they were very, very relieved, actually. We got no trouble in the Italians, I tell you that now, very few, because the most of them were relieved, were very, very glad to see us. I had some terrible tales to tell about the Germans, what the Germans were up to. The dominating German soldiers, you know, that they were very, very relieved. I saw an Italian we rescued that wasn't happy to be coming behind us and stay in front of us. Yeah.
So they were very helpful, were they?
Oh, yes. Any information they passed on to you, there was very few didn't give information, if they could give information. Many of them didn't just take it as right and recommend. We always just said, double check it first. But there wasn't very many told you any lies about them. If they could give the Germans away, we'll give them away, you know, tell you where they were.
You're into October now, late October, when these actions were taking place. Was the weather changing by then?
Changing very well, it kept changing all the time, yeah.
What was it like?
It was a bit colder at night,
Could you keep warm?
Well, I keep warm, but the best we could. I mean, from the back from the battalion, they sent a vehicle, so it was called the central vehicle from my echelon at the back, you see, to keep you warm. But
when you did get the food that was sent up to you at night, as we discussed earlier, was that warm food?
Oh yes, I had a hot meal.
Is it important to have a hot meal?
Oh, very, very important. Yes. I mean, there's wonders to a soldier that when you haven't had anything for quite a while, when a hot meal comes up, it gives them extra strength and everything to carry on. Gives them a bit harder,
In every unit, it'd be a bit too much to expect every man to do his duty, you might say.
Yes.
There must be men who were very reluctant indeed. Did you have this problem with...
Oh, yes, yeah, occasionally, yeah, yes.
How did you deal with it?
Well, I just had to deal with it as we could. I had to demand it, or threaten them, or whatever you like. But they just had to get it done, one way or the other. I don't know how we looked at all. I mean, they each got their shares. There's no one man was picked at another time. I mean, he used to say, well, I had so and so for that job, I get so and so for this job. They could do it, all men could do the same thing in the battalion and the company, or the platoon, so they never used to pick. I never used to pick on any one man in my platoon. Yeah.
Under fire and in action, did you experience any difficulties with some of the men?
Well, there was once or twice in awkwardness, you know, awkwardness, I said. Some say, I'm not going to do this, and I don't want to do this, and I kind of carry that, but it's not really, you know. Of course, used to get along and say, what's the matter? I was next to you, aching hand or something like that. Say, oh, well, let it go for a while, and just, whatever it was, go back to it again. And this is set it out. You should do it. What they refuse to do, they should do it. You see. Just tell them send them back to HQ, and they know they're getting under HQ, they sent to prison, whatnot, they sent it out the line. Did you tell them, in case you say, mind if you get sent back up the line, you're not fighting, you get shot. Sometimes you think twice it was going back from the line, if you're in a fight, you get shot, like, but never had, you just have a phone line.
You didn't have any men who didn't move under fire in action when you were told to go forward?
No, I can't remember ever in my platoon. Occasionally I had, but it was just so illness, real illness, which was proved. I tried it a couple of times, and closer said, I can't go any further, Sergeant. I'm feeling I've got a pain in my left side, and I've got this and the other. And they said, well, hang on a bit more, well, that's a complaint too much today. You should send. Send back by wireless, they want to stretch a guy out to somebody and want to take him back. If they weren't ill, you know, they say, oh, I walk back, so they get, you know, but if they went in the stretcher, it was more than enough to what it is. They had that pain. Occasionally, you had very few went back, but truly they were all bad, and when they got back there, there's nothing wrong with them. Yeah. Because if they got back to the medicals, and they were poor, there was nothing wrong with them. But either primary charge sent straight back, or so they got primary charge, and when they come up the line, they'll do this and the other. So, you know, sometimes you never knew what was going to happen to them because you never got them back. You know, you never got the people back. But every soldier has his. I mean, I should remember like here at times, but what I had to do. If I went on patrol, I'd say, why me, you know, why me, why not so and so? But then, well, I'd always have to do. So, I carry it with myself. If I got a job to do, and I thought somebody else was hadn't done anything. Maybe all any soldiers. Anyone would come to any times. I think the whole world.
Did you experience battle fatigue where men literally had enough?
Well, I experienced that two or three times. A couple of times we thought we were too long in the line. I mean, if you could say even 7 days is too long the line, if you can then one gets to 10 days and 10 days or more. And yeah, it just. You get this little pig sick, you know, if you do. And you can tell by the way the men are getting restless. But it was funny, but just at that time when you thought they were in trouble, it came up part of the line by reading whatever that the time was going to be pulled out for a few years.
How does this kind of mental problem affect? How does it appear?
Well, it just affected. I was in the whole lot of two men, not one of my men, you know, some of us, part of them, I've been a bit here where I was really opposite of it, they sent back to it in 1918. And I said, well, there is an alliance of much credit. I'm surprised that's not more people, you know, let me get back. But, you know, I mean, and I said, come up the line, I said, one time you come up the line for about 10 days. And it was funny, but 10 years up the line, if we couldn't go anywhere, we used to always have the band, all the instruments in a wagon, and the HQ, we used to send for a bring it up, and the band has got together, and we used to go to the hotel, use it for the troops, not, you know, give them a bit lift. So we were working full time, and members of the band, we sent for the instruments to come up. And we say, get it out of it. But carry the sticks and whatnot. Get the spirits over here.
Were the other men sympathetic to one of their comrades, you know, feeling this way or acting in this way?
He's pulling his leg, but after a while, when you realise and say, somebody should come to you, what happens to private so and so? He hasn't come back. No, he's been set at an institution. You should pick it and quiet. Whether you knew what happened or not, you should just say, he's been sent to an institution, he's gone crapless. He's gone bomb happy. It was forgotten all the time.
We told as people in charge of men that to look out for signs of this happening.
You could get the way out, you could tell them where the bloke was going, you know. Kept asking, how long are we going to stick in this part? Are we going to go on the line shortly? Is it going to be pulled back? You know, you knew then he was getting on the board. You know. But as I say, when we pulled back, we say, a little bit less than what then, wash and shave and brush up and get good food, get hot food for how many days we pulled back. And because you never should do anything like that. But the tank commander used to say, right, the soldiers must rest. Because they sent me there for 2 or 3 days. And about 2 days before, due to when I was starting to get a bit, clean the equipment and getting a bit more like soldiers again.
So when you came out of rest, you weren't found other jobs to do?
Oh, no.
Other work?
I mean, it was the old ones, you shouldn't have to have the cooks and whatnot, but I mean,
no.
And they have their cooks now, but you won't get any jobs. At least if you go up for 5 or 6 days, you'll get at least 2 or 3 days just at rest. relaxation, like, you know.
What do you most need when you've pulled out the line after severe fighting?
Well, you should check your clothes. The CQMS has come up when it was sergeant at it. Sergeant, like me, I said, we're going to all the lads and say, what are you missing? Like, then what they're missing, how their clothing was this and the other. And it was passed straight back. And that was sent to Iceland at the back. And new clothes and everything, even boots, if your boots was worn or something like that. You should get me clothes and everything. So
sleep, is that an important factor?
Yes, you sleep any time. We should find decent farmhouses. At the time, you should find decent farmhouses. And a test if it was weather, 10 October, November, that wouldn't be hot weather. But not somewhere where they don't get shed and whatnot, and they'll get the heads and get some nice straw somewhere from some farm there and make some nice beds for themselves. There's no danger that the soldier wouldn't find a place for himself where he would be comfortable. I guarantee that.
How does lack of sleep, when you can't get it, you're under, you know, you're in the line, you're there for several days, the opportunity to get sleep is extremely difficult. How does that affect you when you're in a situation like that?
If you weren't in action fighting, I mean, you can't sit and fight at the same time. So if you were just in a lull before some action and felt a bit tired, but you say it's your break. Half an hour here and here, I'll have this man. I'll keep watch time you do this and I'll keep watch time you do that, you see. Just to work between the companies and the platoons and whatnot.
Did you ever become so tired that you hallucinated, you know, when you get to that really exhausted state?
I think so. I think everybody hallucinates at times, especially when they've been matching for quite a while. I think that every soldier hallucinates.
Are there accidents on the battlefield where men are wounded, killed by their own, or by some other unit?
I've never known it. The only time I can remember, we never got I don't know what happened, but we were advancing to a certain place in Italy towards Di Marno, and some typhoons were giving an objective to clear these soldiers that we were advancing to. And they came in too close to our lines. And fortunately, you know, no casualties, but they got the Germans, but the shells. Their bombs were dropping very, very close to our lane to what had come back to them. That was only the thing we had last week. And I never heard of anybody getting injured or killed in that, you know, but it was hell of a lot at the time. Because even the soldiers were saying, what the hell are these people? The lads were getting annoyed, you see, because when you think your own planes are dropping bombs not 100 yards from you, less than 100 yards from you, from you. You do get a bit worried, don't you? In case it when it comes in the dark on the top of you, see. But that was only fight we had. It was training because I was there most of myself, I was in the front myself. That was the time I was telling you I'd been behind the cow. So I thought well it happened just a bit 2 or 3 days later. 2 or 3 days before that we were advancing and I came across that sniper and we dashed behind this dead cow. As I say, it was close. I've never heard of any soldier actually killing anybody in front of me or accidentally. I dare say it happened. I dare say it happened because of a lot of mistakes made just given the but they didn't come on till later on. I never finished.
By now, of course, we're getting to know your opponents. Did you respect them as soldiers?
Oh, yes, you should have to respect them.
Did they fight cleanly against you?
Well,
if that's the right term. I know you've made briefly mentioned booby traps. What kind of booby traps might you come across?
Well, if I had been holding a certain place for quite a while, and knew that it would be great being back that we were advancing, just took away some grenades and different things like that. You know, maybe something in it. Yeah, the house had been, they said, the gadgets, a little bits of bones in there. They're not tied together, but you generally get it somewhere. So it was triple from the other one in peace. What does it mean? Vicky said it was. Or the Germans from Victor's. They still do little tricks of detonating to pick the watch off a table or something. A ring or something like that, they sent me off with me there. Anything you had to be careful what you touched, until it was really, you had really been affected. Because as I say, you never knew what they were doing. I mean, if you should roll a door one way, and leave a trip way at another door, so that maybe 200 of tassels, you see, six figures. Eventually, I should imagine most sergeants and corporals in charge of that getting that idea. Because we used to always emphasize before you go into a building, look closely if you can look. You've only got a chance sometimes, but if you had a chance, look closely on what the roof is going to be. And as well, the thing that if there were a couple of vehicles, you see, never touch a vehicle because it holds mind us something else. Boots up
there. Were they mining the roads and the tracks?
There's quite a few. Oh, yes, we've come up with quite a few.
What kind of mines were they using?
I have no fucking idea what the number means. It was like a small land mine, it was. Which had we had Lieutenant Mitchell, they've been a little bravery. They got me a captain, he got his foot taken off in the day, and one of our advances, he stood in the main. The one big thing, but it could kill you. But we had a few battalion kids, seven men or whatever, man. But they were small men, forget them, they had a minor reason. But they did mind quite a few. If they had time to mind the case before, if they had, where they should, the commanders are thinking, if these Germans have been holding this place a few days or a week or something, they wouldn't leave it without some defense, so they would mine it. In a place where you were going to advance towards them. But there again, you had to take a chance on that. That was terrible.
How did you deal with them, mines, in a situation like that?
To send for engineers back, to send something back in.
You didn't probe them for yourself?
No. Even though you had lessons on it, you hadn't time to do it, actually. You see, just stop them from that area, you see. But you should send back them. We were up within hours trying to sort the minefield out. Maybe it's odd mine put down here and there. It wasn't a minefield, but just to stop you to think that it might be a minefield, you know. Just individual mines. We didn't have time to minefield the whole lot, but it's an individual mine where I thought the troops were going to run across. And if one went off, well, you'd stop because you had to get the tested for mine, you see. The sort of hindering them or anything else. Some funny tricks.
Did you have any situation where your officer was wounded or taken away and you had to take over?
Yes. I didn't take up. Lieutenant Sherlock was injured in one episode in Platkitty. He had to take the platoon.
There was always an officer to come in to take it over.
There was a second commander. Pat Shiro and Ronnie Shiro and Pat Casey was the two together. One was company commander and one was the company commander. Then you had the odd officer came in to take over and the officer got wounded. And then who his name was, but he sort of thing. I can never tell you, the only officer I remember was Lieutenant Brown. Was in my company when we got to Cecina, because one of ours had got injured before that in Cecina. That was where the monastery was taken.
You moved up to the Carigliano, another river, and a very mountainous area there. What are your memories of that area?
Very little. Very little. I can't remember much at all.
Again, was it similar mountain fighting?
Just similar mountain terrain. Taking it straight at all, just taking it straight. It's like I'd like to go to Jumano.
This would be late 1944. The weather then would be really getting turning bad. What were the
One week it rained for two solid days, and then the war was practically stopped because there's nobody around and nobody to take them. I think the Germans in the same way as us, just getting in under rain. It was really bad. Solid rain for 2 days. I mean, we had to send troops back for extra blankets, clothes, shoulders, and extra gray coats, and windshields, and gas caps and whatnot to keep the rain out. It was really bad. And then I thought the snow came, I had to pull over. So.
And where were you at that particular occasion? Were you in the line, as you said?
Yes, I was in the line because when we came out later on, after that, it was still snow when we came out.
And were you living in slit trenches?
Yes, so I went to slit trenches.
How did you try to attempt to keep the water out? They must have got filled with water.
Yeah. When you said your belly can, everything, you eat out your belly can, you took the water out your belly can. But we used to try and find a little bit of shadow, but it was in the tree. One thing we never thought to go under the tree.
Why was that?
I can't even say because it was never had a roof tree, and I used to think why. But it was mind us, and the enemy was thinking, oh, if it's really going to the tree, it might miss a mine, sort of thing. Which the word is a bit like a chance. But,
and the roads and tracks in this heavy weather conditions, what were they like?
Drains on carrier from yet. If you sent for the tanks, they couldn't get it from you. And the transport couldn't get up here for doing your food. You said, I've been quite worried about it to the Egyptians that was bringing your food or hot food. It was that bad.
What was conditions underfoot for you?
Really bad. Sloppy, muddy water, 6 inches and 7 inches deep.
Did this affect the health of the men?
It did. It affected the health of quite a few men. You can't fight the flu, sneezing and coughing and blowing, otherwise you may be able to miss it at the same back of the lane.
Did you have anything like what was in the First World War called trench foot, with the wet feet, having wet feet all the time?
Never come across it.
Were you ordered to change your socks, etc., regularly?
I have a pair of socks. You should dry the ones the best way you can. But as I say, the only time you got to change your proper kit was when you came out the line. If you were off for a few days, you should get your kit together to make sure you have fresh stuff and you have it back in the line again. It's difficult at times to keep your kit in good order.
In the line, in conditions like this, where you're basically just laid there and you couldn't move, how did you deal with the enemy there? Was it patrolling?
No, unless you're ordered to patrol, but as Mr. Macy, having two men in the slip tents, which was a habit of following, and have one sleeper's all along with keeping going, and make sure that they were getting enough sleep, and hour on, hour off, or tours on, tours every day, to keep it on that way.
Did you have snipers out yourselves?
No, off, we never had snipers. Well, we might come in, right? But I suppose some of them come in.